Listen to the Vibes.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Listen to the Vibes. I'm very happy to welcome Robert Brill here. He is the CEO of Brill Media. From what I understand, it's advertising, but a little more involved than that. But Robert, tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Thanks for having me, Kyle. Yep, 20 years in advertising. I have a business called Brill Media, which I've been bootstrapping for the last 10 years. And let's see, married and have a five-year-old little boy.
So what exactly entails your advertising?
Yeah, so a big part of what we do is we help businesses and other advertising agencies run ads so that they drive sales, leads and sales. Fundamentally, there's a lot of people who can do advertising, but not a lot of people who do it effectively. And when we talk about advertising, what that means in practice is buying space on a platform like Meta, or so Facebook and Instagram, or Google, or TikTok, or Hulu, or Roku, and delivering a message to a targeted group of people. If you're paying for messaging space, it's advertising. If you're not paying for the space, then it's not advertising. It's promotion or SEO or social media or something else. So it's the fundamental difference between posting on, let's say, TikTok versus buying ads on TikTok. You get more targeting, more visibility, and you get to ensure that the right people see your message so that they buy stuff from you.
Now, who's your target client?
Yeah, typically it's going to be agencies. So we're an outsource or a white label media buying firm. So agencies will work with us to run ads, and they will often do creative work. So they're the ones who are going to create the slogan, like "Just Do It." They're the ones who are going to make film commercials and do the photography and do the animations so that whatever they're selling is visually appealing and interesting. And that's a creative type of work. And then our job is to come in and ensure that the right people see the message that they've developed. And that's the sort of data and numbers type of work.
Oh, okay. I think I get what you're talking about. So say, I don't know, Dr. Pepper, they come to you and say, "Hey, I've got this great commercial." You kind of go in and figure out, all right, who are we looking at that's going to be probably more interested in seeing this commercial, or I don't know.
Exactly. I mean, there's audience data there, right? So I'll say Hershey's, because I did some work like 7 years ago on a consulting job for Hershey's. And, they have data that says that they need to reach 20 million people. I'm making up the number. I don't know what the exact number was now. Like 20 million people a week. If they deliver advertising to 20 million people a week, they will see, and again, I'm making this up, don't know the exact number, they'll see a 1% lift in sales when people go to Walmart and CVS and whatever, and they buy Hershey's products. So they'll say, okay, how can we effectively reach 20 million people a week? And how can we reach them 5 times a week? So you really have to deliver 100 million ad impressions. So they might run ads on Facebook and Instagram, for example. And they may say that their audience are people who are 18 to 34. So we'll narrow down the targeting to people 18 to 34. And basically our job is to run a lot of ads to get in front of people 18 to 34. Then they do their media mix modeling, which basically looks at sales and attributes it back to marketing activity, about whether or not they've achieved an incremental lift or improvement in sales. Did they achieve that 1% lift in sales that they predicted would happen? So our job is to run the ads. But when you look at smaller companies, it's a different framework. And really it's about training the machine learning algorithm, training Meta, training Google to find your best customers. So it's a little bit different.
So does it go a little further as far as like demographic? I don't know, guys that like the Batman page or something, they tend to drink more Dr. Pepper. So do you break it down that far, or more age and
that? Yeah, so the old way of doing it was you'd run television ads and it's age and gender and like household income.
Right.
The current way that we do it is we do broad targeting on Meta, and the broad targeting on Meta is going to be age, gender, and location. And then when we talk about broad, like if you're a restaurant, the broad audience geographically is going to be people who are 5 miles, let's say, or 10 miles around an address. Mm-hmm. Or if you're in Manhattan, it's going to be 5 blocks around an address, you know, that type of thing. Right. So that's how far people will go to buy your burger or your pizza or whatever you're offering. Then, but for B2B services, like we do, when we sell advertising solutions to companies, we can work with people all over the United States. So our broad targeting is across the United States. So we target a broad audience, a large group of people, because Meta knows better than anyone how to route our ad creative to the people who are interested in what we have to say. The platform is just that good. It has data on all of us for like the last 10 or 20 years, both on and off Facebook and Instagram. And then what we do is we pump it full of creative development ads that we think are going to be relevant. So we constantly are creating ads, and we're doing scientific testing, control and variable testing, powered by Meta's algorithm to identify, so that Meta can serve up the ads and identify which ads are the most interesting to their audience. Over time, we start to understand which one ad out of hundreds are the all-star. So every month we're creating ads, hundreds of ads. We're going to find which one ad is the all-star ad. And that will give us insight about the types of products and services are really relevant. So really, you know, what we've been talking about AI for about a year and a half now in sort of the global or the US culture, the zeitgeist. But Meta has a really powerful algorithm that is powered by AI that helps you understand how to route the right ads to the right people.
And I still believe that they're listening to us, because every time we're talking about something and then get on Facebook, an ad will pop up for the most obscure thing that you could be talking about. It's listening, isn't it?
So the official answer by any of these platforms is the platforms are not listening. I've also had that experience, and I'm like, there's no possible other alternative than it's listening to the conversation and serving up an ad. So I don't know. I don't know what they're actually doing. I can tell you on the record that they are saying that they're not listening to our recordings.
Mm-hmm. I'm not even going to get in. That's a whole nother podcast. How did you get into this?
Yeah. So when I was in college, I had an internship with a startup advertising company. And I don't think they ever actually became a real company at any point, because they dissolved shortly after I was working there. It was right around 9/11. And one of the two principals of the company was on a flight that was about the same route a week earlier, and he got really spooked. Not surprisingly, I would also be spooked. Anyway, so the company kind of like never went anywhere, but this person told me about the different types of work you could do in advertising. And it's like, you can do the creative work where you come up with the slogans and whatnot. You can do the ad buying, which is what we do, which is serving up the ads. You can do account management, which helps people share information and communicate effectively. And I was like, I could do the ad buying part. That sounds really interesting. So 2 weeks out of college, I got a job at one of the largest multinational ad agencies, which is Universal McCann, as an assistant digital media buyer. But I focused on that. I knew exactly what I was trying to achieve. And I applied for different jobs with that title, and one of them stuck. And I got really lucky with the place I work. I really enjoyed it, and the people there were phenomenal.
Was you scared when you started your own company?
Oh yeah, in fact, I actually started the company and then just took a full time job like 3 months later. I didn't want to deal with all the intricacies. I felt like I was a strong expert practitioner of ad buying, but I didn't know how to sell. and I didn't know how to, there were big financial risks I had to take, and I just didn't want to take them. So I was like, okay, I'm just going to push all this to the side, take a full-time job. I took the full-time job. I didn't enjoy working there, but that was a me thing, not a them thing. I basically became a bad employee. It wasn't a good situation. And because I at the end of the day, I knew that I had this burning desire to start my own agency. And so when I was done with that job, that's when I went full-time with my agency. Yeah. And I thought I worked hard in my first 10 years of my career. I worked so much harder now that I have my own company. It like never ends. I'm trying to get out of that. But yeah, it's a really interesting, it's a visceral, someone told me this, I like this quote. It's a visceral life-changing experience being an entrepreneur.
Well, I'm going to know who Robert really is. So what has been like the biggest hurdle you've had in your life?
I'm comedian David Race in Los Angeles. I host a celebrity-filled paranormal talk show like no other. Monstrosity has great guests answering weird questions. You won't believe the combo of celebrities and paranormal experts who've been on this show. I guarantee you'll like Monstrosity, or you get your time back. Go to monstrositypodcast.com right now and take a look.
I think the biggest hurdle was, trying to manage building a business, nurturing a personal relationship, and being good on both and ending up being bad on both. And basically there was a time in our life where I thought maybe my wife and I wouldn't get married. And that was because of me, not because of her, because I became really difficult. And as a result, we had a break, and I had to like reprioritize what I was doing with my life. And I prioritized her and our future together. And that was the absolute best decision I could have made, because my life is just infinitely better with her.
I know what you mean. I wouldn't be the person I am now if I didn't have the wife that I have now. But did she have her doubts? I mean, I hope that's not too personal.
Yeah, I mean, the doubts came from a misalignment in our expectations. See, what I was thinking as a relatively naive 32, 33-year-old is that I need to get all my stuff in order. I need to be financially secure and professionally secure and all this stuff before I really should get married. Which was a really silly way of looking at the world, because what I've learned since then, over the last, we've been married for 7 years now, and we've been together for over a decade now. What I learned is that life becomes infinitely better when you have a really great partner. Life is good. Make better decisions. Have a larger collective like unit to kind of like create support and be supportive of. And it's just infinitely better than like trying to do this on my own. I would just constantly make not bad decisions, but I know I'm making better decisions now because of her.
How many companies are like yours out there?
There's in aggregate, there's probably about 40,000 advertising or marketing companies. There's a million people on Upwork that are doing marketing gig work. But companies that are like ours, I don't know how many of them exist. Maybe a few, maybe a handful. But I think because there are big advertising agencies that serve big brands, like you mentioned Dr. Pepper, right? Like, we're not going after Dr. Pepper or Coca-Cola. We're going after small and mid-sized companies that still have anywhere from $100,000 to $500,000 to spend in advertising. Still a big business, but it's just not, the billions of dollars that are being managed by the large multinational agencies. So we have a very niche market. And then what we do, I think, is very special because we hire really senior experts. We don't hire people out of college because they just don't have the experience that we're looking for. We have really strong standard operating procedures. And a big part of our success has to do with the contextualization and the communication we offer, like ensuring that everyone understands exactly what we're doing for them. I think the biggest mistake a lot of agencies make, which fundamentally makes us different, is they try to keep their learnings and their insights in-house, and they don't share it with the client. The more we can keep our client and our businesses happy with understanding what's happening with their marketing, the more they understand how hard we're working for them. So it works out really well for all parties.
Well, you already answered one of my questions before I could even ask it. But when you get on a podcast and you're talking about your business, are you trying to maybe catch that possible client out there? Are you trying to inspire others to chase their dreams? What's your ultimate goal when you do these?
You know, I think selfishly, I like the repetition. A big part of what I espouse to other business owners is you're going to get better. You're going to do great because you have the repetition. You've done the work. It's just like going to the gym. It's like running. It's like anything. It's like playing a sport. Like the first day you're going to do it, you won't be as good as the 100th day you're doing it and as good as the 10,000th day that you're doing it. So a big part of this podcast thing that I do is like it helps me become a better speaker about our business. It helps me understand more about product market fit, which is what people are interested in talking about. Helps me hone how I talk about our business. And yeah, look, at the end of the day, if we catch a client here or there from this, that's fantastic. But I think what I've learned over the last 20 years can help a lot of different businesses. And when those businesses get helped, whether they work with us or not, it's a good thing to do because we all could use a little help in this world.
Sure. Well, that person out there who's wanting to maybe start their own business, would you advise them the way you did it, or would you have a whole different way for them to do it?
Yeah. So we actually have a course out right now where we talk about where we help people start advertising agencies, which sounds kind of weird. Why would we want to create more competitors? The way it's set up is we want people who are sick of their 9-to-5 to be able to take ownership of how they live their life, live the life that they want. If, you know, I want to go to 40 Dodgers games a year with my child and my wife. And like, that's what success means to me. So whatever success means to you, you can achieve it with, if you have the gift of gab, if you want to be your own boss, if you want to work hard for yourself and not work hard for someone else. So you don't have to actually run Facebook ads. You don't need to know how to run Google or how to develop a website, or how to do SEO. The nature of this program is really focused on outsourcing all of it. You can outsource the ad buying to us. You can outsource SEO to another company. But if you want to be an entrepreneur, this is a big opportunity. Now, for any entrepreneur listening, it's about understanding the fundamentals. You know, the different type of business you have will dictate how you go to market. But the first thing you need to consider, I didn't realize I was doing this, so it would have helped me accelerate how I think about my business had I had someone like this telling me this information, which is the following. You need product market fit. You need to know what to say and how to say it and how to price your business so that people will buy from you. If people aren't buying from you, you probably don't have product market fit. That can come from a lot of different reasons. One reason for that is maybe there's not a market for what you have. In Los Angeles, for example, you don't see Caribbean fast food. And really, I don't think anywhere you see Caribbean fast food in the United States. Chances are that a few companies have tried and failed because there isn't a market for Caribbean fast food in the United States. Maybe the food is too different. Maybe the taste is different, whatever the case is, but nothing has stuck. So if you're going to market trying to become the McDonald's of Caribbean fast food, you might have a great product, but you don't have a market. Hence, you don't have product market fit. In different situations, you may not have the ability to solve an urgent enough pain point. an urgent enough pain point looks like, you know, when I went to market, I was offering consulting services, I was offering analytics services, and people didn't want that stuff. What they wanted was ad buying. Consulting was fine, but there was an urgency around it. What was urgent, they had an ad campaign that needed someone to run it, and they didn't have anyone. So I calibrated my insight into the business to say, look, what do people want right now? They need ad buying. What can I offer them? Ad buying. Product market fit. So yeah, you've just got to try stuff, and understanding what you're doing, I think, accelerates how you go and do it effectively and how you set your goals to become effective at what you're doing.
Yeah, you definitely don't want to try to sell Dodgers uniforms in Arlington, Texas.
That's funny. I like that.
Well, what do you like to do outside of all this?
You know, I really am passionate about my work. I know it sounds kind of like cheeseball, but I really like this work. But I do like to go to Dodgers games. I like to I watch
I'm sorry.
Movies. Ah, come on. I know. It's been painful. We need a full season World Series. Yeah, so you know, at the end of the day, movies, Dodgers games. I'm starting to become a fan of Inter Miami soccer with Lionel Messi. That's fascinating to watch him play. I was really moved and inspired by the World Cup a few years ago when him and Argentina won the World Cup. But I'm also into like whatever my 5-year-old is into, which is monster trucks and dinosaurs, and yeah.
Oh my God, he would get along perfect with my grandson because that's all he lives for. Monster trucks and dinosaurs.
Really?
Yes.
It's the best. Like we go to Monster Jam and we have probably like 20 different Monster Jam toy cars. It's amazing.
Well, I'm embarrassed, but I think we have about 100 trucks, and then there's the play sets, the Thunderous, and
Thunderous.
Let's see, there's the
Megalodon.
I forgot what anyway, it's some kind of play set where it does this crazy spin and jump, and I can't even name all of them, but I think my wife says that I live vicariously through my grandson now. You know, we didn't have Monster Jam when I was a kid, so
yeah. The best. So we have a remote control Megalodon. It is
got
the
that.
You have that. It is the best toy because it goes so fast, and it's like we have a bigger version. We have a bigger El Toro Loco, which doesn't move as fast. It's too big, and right. The motor is not as strong. But the small Megalodon is just absolutely so much fun to play with.
It's not the one that came with Gravedigger, is it?
I don't think so. It's probably like this big.
Okay, because they've got so many different size RCs. It's crazy. Yeah. But there was a 2-pack with the Megalodon and Gravedigger.
Mm.
We got that one. And then we got the Gravedigger with the tracks instead of the wheels. That thing is crazy. It does. You just have to see it.
Okay. Yeah. It's a lot of fun to play with.
Now you have to get him the big truck that hauls him because he's got multi-levels that you can put your trucks and then you can launch them out the cab.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Paul went a little overboard.
Yeah, we really have a good time. This was the second year. So our whole neighborhood of full of kids, so there were like 12 of us or 14 of us. We went to Monster Jam for the second time in a row this year in Anaheim. It was a great time. All the kids loved it. They're playing with their cars while the cars are doing their show. It's a great time.
Pawpaw's favorite is Earthshaker. So.
Yeah, Earthshaker.
And he had a blast. We've got you've seen the Outlaw truck?
No.
Okay, well, we took him to one where the the kid that drives the outlaw truck actually came out and met the fans and signed autographs. He went and got one of the little trucks and signed it for my grandson, and his name is the same as my grandson's name.
Oh, that's sweet. That's got to be very special.
I could see we could have a Monster Jam podcast.
100%.
Hey, do you have a website?
Yeah, our website is brillmedia.co, B as in boy, R-I-L-L, media.co.
And what is your social media?
I think the best place to find me is on TikTok. The screen name is it's Brill_media. But I'm on YouTube and LinkedIn and all that stuff. But I post videos every day on TikTok.
Oh, well, I'll be glad to share all those links in the description. And Robert, let's see, we could talk for hours about Monster Jam.
Yes.
But unfortunately, we can't do that.
Understand.
But thank you so much for coming on the show, man.
Thanks, Kyle. Appreciate it.
And also want to thank all you folks out there. If you are new to the channel, I hope you'll come back. Please hit that subscribe button for my regulars. You guys are awesome because you make it possible for me to do this. Until the next one, everyone, please take care. Be kind to one another. God bless and peace.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Listen to the Vibes. You can catch us on Buzzsprout or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts, and on YouTube. Follow us on Facebook at The Vibes Broadcast Network